Hey, I'm Daniel Colburn.
I'm Caleb Porzio.
Welcome to 20% Time, where two coworkers discuss one programming topic per week for an average of
41.6 minutes.
Very good.
How you doing, Caleb?
Oh man, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been some time.
It has. We've been intermittent.
We have. We've had overlapping weeks where one or the other of us like took some time off, didn't have 20% time.
Yeah, that's how it correlates. This is my first 20% time in a long time.
Yeah, we've been kind of like all over the place.
Yeah.
But we got it today.
True.
Lots happened.
Yeah.
You released a package.
I did.
It's cool. I did.
Yeah, it's a cool package.
Tell the people.
Parental. If you recall from the early days of 20% Time, when we discovered single table inheritance as an alternative to polymorphic relations in Eloquent, and I was pretty hot on the issue. And so I wrote a blog post on how to do a really basic implementation of single table inheritance. For people who don't know what that is, I guess the basic gist is you have a user model, normal users table. What if you wanted to have an admin model that extends the user model and automatically adds a global scope so that when you type admin :all, you only get admin. So that was like the MVP of single table inheritance. And then I wanted to make a package that had a full implementation like Rails. So Rails actually adds a type column to a table, kind of like you see in the polymorphic relationship type column. So you have a type column. So your users table has a type column. And if it's an admin, then the type column is set to app admin :, class, whatever, or app/app, you know, whatever the class namespace of the model. And so if you query user :all with this package that I just launched, you'll get back, if any type columns are set, it'll automatically give you that model. So if you type user :all, you might get some users, some admins, some any other, you know, children that you define in your app. And it's all pretty much handled automatically. So
does it make a bunch of extra requests to do that? How's that work?
No, it just, so when you, if you did, so a straight user :all does the query, and then it runs through and it hydrates new models. So instead of hydrating new user models, it just does a little
just
check in there,
and
it hydrates just
type.
A different model. Yeah, yeah. It's, and there's
smart.
Lots of, yeah, it's pretty nice. It's really, it's two traits. It's all it is it's two model traits, one for the child, one for the parent. The child has parent models. The parent returns child models. And we're hitting one tiny limitation with some weird stuff, but basically because Laravel intuits table names and foreign key names and everything, I can do most of that overriding, but there's one little part that I can't override because it does a straight class base name call to get the class name of the model, and you have to, so whatever. I have a pull request open, hopefully Taylor likes it, and then it'll be world domination. So I'm excited about it. So it's out. Steve Shoger designed a little logo
thing for
it. Can you
explain that pull request to me real quick?
Okay. So
I looked at it and it kind of made sense, but
yeah. So for a many-to-many relationship, okay.
Uh-huh.
So let's say you have users and podcasts. It's a many-to-many relationship, and for a many-to-many, so if you say in the user class you have a public function podcasts return belongs to many podcast :, class, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your definition. Laravel will automatically intuit the pivot table name to be user, it'll be podcast singular / user singular. Whichever model comes first alphabetically, it'll sort them. So that's how Laravel internally figures out the name.
Right.
So let's say that I extend podcast to have a child model of podcast called, good podcast. Mm-hmm. And so let's say in your user model, you want to have a relationship to good podcasts. So you would say public function, good podcast, returns, belong to many, good podcast, : class,
uh-huh.
Right? So when Laravel figures out the pivot table name, it's going to look for good podcast _ user. Does that make sense?
Yep. Even
which
though
doesn't
it's,
exist.
It's single table inherited off of podcast, so it should be
right.
podcast user.
So it should be it should still use the same pivot table. So you just have to the second parameter you pass in just has to be an override that says podcast _ user.
Gotcha.
And it's weird because if you do it the other direction, it works because it's calling joining table the method that model has on itself. But mm-hmm. if you call it on user, it doesn't have access to whatever. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So it's a little tweak in the code base. It's not big at all, but it just gives a little method called joining table segment that allows you to override it in any model. So
cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a breath of mouthful.
That's smart. Cool. So you had a topic. You sounded excited. Yesterday we spoke. We spoke and we scheduled this recording. And he said, I got something.
Yeah.
What you got?
So I got two things. One thing I want to show and
you
tell
got
you.
Two somethings.
Yep. Uh-huh. A cool thing I want to tell you about, and I think you'll uh-huh. be excited. And I'll probably write a blog post when I get time. And then uh-huh. the second one is something that I think would be cool, but I haven't put a ton of time into thinking about it, and I don't even have any thoughts. Like, I want to brainstorm, and I want to hear your thoughts, and maybe we can come up with a solution. Or maybe you'll tell me that we don't need it at all. So
I'm kind of feeling brainstorming, so I'm not really in the mood to shut down your bright ideas.
Oh. Oh.
Oh.
All right, so you want the show and tell first?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal.
Yes.
Back in the day, uh-huh. Caleb made everything a model. Everything was an eloquent model, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's an entity, it's a model, you have a table, right? And so let's say that I'm remembering, like, all right, I'm working on an app, and let's say that somebody wants an admin table or mm-hmm. Some admin functionality and some basic settings that the admin can set.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like five of them, like mm-hmm. show this header or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so naturally I'm like, all right, well, this is something that an admin would change in the app and whatever. So I would create a table called maybe settings, like a global site settings table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a model and you could set them, and the first seed you might seed with the rows, but there would just be like a fixed set of rows, like five rows for each, you know, each setting. Like the table itself might have a column for setting name and then value, right?
Sure.
Have you come across this in your lifetime?
Yes.
Something like that? Right.
Yes.
So then when I dug into the Spark code base, I saw how Taylor used just straight code in the service provider to set options and stuff. And it kind of like clicked a light bulb for me. Like, site options could just be hard coded in a service provider, and you would just have to commit to change them. You know, you don't, everything doesn't have to be a model or a row or in the database, right?
Sure.
So that spoke to me. And so I went with that pattern pretty hard. So let's say, and then like, so that kind of grew into me making a lot of fixtures, you know? So in my app, like if I need, let's say there's some complex calculation that uses some lookup table or something, like rates for something, I don't know. I would just create a PHP fixture array instead of creating a whole model called, you know, rates and then having a table with all those rates. I would just create a PHP array and put it stored in a folder called fixtures or something, and mm-hmm. it would just be .php. And you could roll through it. Do you ever mm-hmm. do you ever write fixtures like for an app, not just for tests, but like fixtures, pieces of data just hard coded in PHP?
Usually, I wrap them in classes, even if they're not eloquent models.
Mm-hmm.
I build like some popos, and
yeah,
I use them basically as like DTOs.
Right. Same. Yeah, I do that too. And when you do that...
So what are you talking about? What is the difference between what you're talking about and that?
I may have... This may be confusing, but I'll just tell you the solution and I think it'll
okay.
click.
Okay.
Let's just use the DTO thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you make a DTO because you need some piece of data. You don't want to bother with a table. And a table's not really the right thing because it's so mutable, you know? Like, you have to seed it up once, and then you don't want to seed it again. So do you put it in a seed or in a migration? Well, you put it in a migration, but that just feels kind of weird. Right? Like, you feel me? Feel me? Mm-hmm. Okay. But, so here's the pain point. The pain point of those DTOs is you have to write all this logic. Like, you have to custom, you basically have to redo a ton of stuff Eloquent just gives you out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you might, like, I often in those DTOs, I have, like, public function all that just returns all of them, wraps in a collection, and then I have, like, a couple other methods that do stuff.
Tracking? I'm not using them that way, but okay, yeah, I get what you're saying, though.
Okay. So, anyway, so for me, I realized, like, I really want all the power of Eloquent, like an Eloquent model, but I don't want it to just be in the MySQL database that anybody can change. And it just felt so kind of bad to me. So I was brainstorming with Mitch, and I'm like, yeah, it's like, it would be amazing. What if we had like a separate database just for fixtures? And it was a completely separate database connection just called fixtures. And then he had this brilliant idea. He's like, why don't you just make it a SQLite file? And I was like, oh, dang. So this is what I do. I have a SQLite file called fixtures. It's its own database. All of my non-changing fixture tables go into that SQLite file. There's its own separate fixtures migrations folder, so it migrates itself. And the SQLite file itself is version controlled. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You tracking that?
I am tracking that.
So then when I want to create a model, I just set connection fixtures, and it's a fixture model. And in the migration, I seed up all the data in like a db colon colon insert.
Interesting.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And because it's version controlled, it's totally uh-huh. safe. Like, it's not somewhere somebody can open like a SQL Pro and change it. It's version controlled and safe. This data doesn't change. You can have relationships between connections. So you can still have Eloquent relationships between other models and these fixture models.
Mm-hmm.
And in your migrations, you can change your migrations. You don't have to add new migrations. You can change existing ones because you're re-migrating the whole thing every time you change it because it's just a fixtures database. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense.
You can write tests that rely on it.
Yeah, no, I have a lot of love and some concerns. So the love is I have been on projects that had just way too many tables. And the reasons they had way too many tables, because there are things, like you said, there are things where it's like you want to have a relationship between, like, for example, say you are like a website that maintains like a list of doctors, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, every doctor is in a certain state of the union.
Yeah,
you
know? Yep.
And you don't want to just have that be a string. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Where you're just like checking their strings. But what that requires is that you are now maintaining a database table full of states of the union.
Right.
Yep. Which is
that's a perfect example. Who hasn't made a states fixture array?
Yeah. And nobody wants to have a database table called states where it's like Alabama, AL, Alaska, AK, you know?
I know.
I've seen that table multiple times in multiple apps. Because at some point you want to say, you know, Dr. Ware has state Alaska.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
Let's say that there's a feature down there. Okay, so yeah, I'm just going to carry on with where you're going. You have a states table thing. So that mm-hmm. that's old me would make a mm-hmm. states table.
Right.
And then middle me would make a states fixture.
Array.
Right. And then I would make a popo that would wrap it and have methods for it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that there's a feature. So the new way is to create a migration that migrates it into the fixtures, you know, SQLite file. Let's uh-huh. say that somebody adds a feature and is like, all right, half these states, let's say there's rates for each uh-huh. state and what a doctor charges. And some states, like maybe you have insurance and
like tax and, or something.
Yeah. And they're all
tax rate.
Yeah. So now you have an actual model. You can add a column to the states that says rate, or you could say like can insure. You know, mm-hmm. and whatever. And now you could say like doctor, arrow, state, arrow, can insure, and use that in like conditionals throughout your app, whatever.
Sure, of course. So here
which is a huge advantage to just the PHP fixture array
100%
thing. Yeah, okay.
100%. Here's the downsides I see. So in general, you don't want a version control binary stuff, right?
Why not?
And well, the big reason is that like it's not transparent, right? So what data is in your SQLite file isn't transparent. It's not something you can see it change.
True.
In your
you
GitHub
pull requests.
You can see
the migrations. The migrations would change, and those are
no. But control. if you're actually committing the SQLite file, you're also committing the data.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right.
So yep. If someone changes the abbreviation for Alabama and commits it,
yep,
it can go to production without getting code reviewed.
Yeah, sort of. Like it would show up in the migration. All the data is manipulated through the migrations.
Right, right. But isn't
but
that
somebody
a...
could just pop open like a SQLite editor and change this conceivably. But
right.
But in general, like anytime any data is changed, if we're in bounds,
mm-hmm.
anytime any data is changed, you change the migration and remigrate the whole SQLite file. So the commit would have the changed binary.
Oh, so the data is just
so it's still hard coded.
Are you or are you not committing a SQLite file?
I am. I'm committing both.
Okay. I don't hate this, but why don't you store all this data in the migrations instead of in the SQLite file?
I do. I store it in both, because if I just store it in the migrations, I don't have Eloquent, you know? Like
but then when you pull down, you should have to like remigrate.
Huh.
And like re
That's interesting. That would make it
because then we're actually comparing text to text, right?
Right. You're still comparing text to text. I see what you're saying, though. The only difference is that you... Go on.
Well, okay. A SQLite file is not human readable.
Right.
Right?
But the migration that contains the change that you write is...
But there's nothing stopping someone from changing the actual SQLite database.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So developer 2 comes onto your project, yeah. doesn't understand what you're doing, realizes that there's something that he thinks is a mistake, or you know, he or she is just like editing the SQLite file for like testing or development or something.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to debug something and it's changing values in the SQLite file, forgets what they've changed, saves it, pushes it up in a pull request. Maybe at the same time that they are pushing up a migration change. So when you see, oh, the SQLite file changed, you're like, oh, that makes sense because they changed a migration. So of course the SQLite file changed. But because you can't see into the SQLite file, you don't know how it changed. And so if one of the ways that it changed was that they like doubled the tax rate for California, now, and that goes to production because you can't see it in any of your pull requests, now you're like, you have like a math breaking change that's not visible by code reviewers.
Yeah. Okay. Couple things. Interesting.
So my thing is, I think you git ignore the SQLite file, and in your make file or your build instructions or whatever, you generate that SQLite file from migrations every time.
Right. Yeah, you remigrate fresh on a push to production every time the SQLite.
And that way everything's in text.
That's actually good. I think that's good. There's a part of me that really likes how clean and simple it is just version yep. controlling the SQLite file.
So
and there
if
are,
SQLite files were stored as JSON or YAML or any
right.
human
what
readable
what if I just
format?
Had like an automatic thing that just like JSON snapshots the whole database and throws it in like a human readable snapshot thing?
Like
I'm
as
not
a Git
serious,
hook or something?
But you could do that.
Like as a Git hook? We have internet connection issues.
Okay, I'm going black in the face.
All right, yep, okay. Same. It's been a problem recently, man, the internet.
Yeah. Is that you?
Yeah. It's me, I think.
Internet.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay,
so snapshot is what you just said.
Yeah, you could make something that on every like push it snapshots the whole SQLite file into a JSON file, so you could read the diff. But your way's
right,
better.
But well, and the thing about that is like it's so easy to the thing with
to
Git
not,
hooks in
yeah.
general is that people eventually are just going to say Git push force or something and ignore the. Seen the same thing with your ENV syncer, which you know, people.
You seen it in the wild? Like you've seen people like.
Ignore it?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. People just like evade it because they're not sure. What happens is their ENV file gets out of sync with master, and then basically if it diverges in two directions or something, or if their ENV file like picks up a bunch of entries from multiple branches over time, and then they go to push. So maybe they've switched branches like four times since they last pushed. Then their ENV file has all of these different entries for random feature flags and other stuff. And so then when they go to ENV sync, it's like all of these things that they don't recognize, and they don't know which of them they're supposed to have and which of them they're not supposed to have. So they just add the one they know about and they force push.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it happens.
Wow.
It happens.
Yep.
It causes confusion.
That's really funny.
I've cleaned up some of that confusion.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. The
like, just, I don't think you can depend on Git hooks.
Add as a build step is like migrate. So I have a separate artisan command for migrating the fixtures, so you don't have to like remember the migration flag, you know, for like to specify a different connection in the fixtures folder, in the migrations folder. So I just have like client name colon, you know, whatever. So so I should just add that to the CodeShip and Forge, you know, like deploy script, that it just gets, you know, remigrated. That's what's up. That's what's up. I like it a lot.
I also like it.
Yeah. And so the thing about the fixtures, the cool thing is all the things when you're working with database stuff, a bunch. So there's all the goodness, like Eloquent. That's the goodness. And then there's all the weirdness that you have to do because databases can change all the time and it's out of your control. So you don't test against things in an actual database. You know, you use factories and all this stuff. With the fixtures database, you can test against all that stuff. I treat it as if it's code in my app. So I test with it. I'll test against whatever. If the test fails, you change, you know, that tells you something. Like it's not, you won't get a false positive because it, you know, or a false negative. So, oh, good times. This also arose from the burning question for me was, how do I want an Eloquent array driver. That's what I want. We got a MySQL driver. I want a PHP driver. You know?
Or just like a JSON driver.
Yeah, right. That's what I wanted.
Which is kind of Mongo, but that's too slow.
Is there a Mongo driver? There's not a Mongo driver. You wouldn't get...
I'm sure someone has made a version of...
Yeah, but you wouldn't get like relationships and all. Well, maybe. I don't know.
I'm sure someone's made a not very good version. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pumped about this, and I've been living with it for a while, and it's held up to... It's stood the test of time a little bit, like since I've sort of used it, and it's undergone changes and production pushes and all sorts of stuff, and it's working great, and I'm super excited about it. So
cool.
Yeah.
What is your other thing? Your more up in the air, half baked thing.
The up in the air, half baked thing. This is my next want for Eloquent. So similarly, like before, I wanted a PHP driver, and this is how I did it. Uh-huh. Now I want immutable rows. I want something with Eloquent. So you know, like event sourcing, an event is created, and it's not mutable at all. If you want to change the event, you make a new event. You know? So I want like a database table where you can only create rows. Uh-huh. You can't modify anything. You can only create new ones.
You can just do this with your database. Like, databases can be read-only, write-only.
Yeah, so I want it to be write-only, not modify, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, it can't... So, here's the use case. Tell me if you can feel me on the use case.
Yeah.
So, let's say you're doing some legal thing. Mm-hmm. And you have a table called... legal questions, and then a users table, and then a pivot table called users answers to legal questions, right? When a user answers a legal question, you can't change the question, you know? Like, conceivably, you physically can, but you, like, I don't want it such that you could change a question and then look back in the history and say, oh, the user agreed to that question. You know, they didn't.
Right.
Like, I want it so that, let's say you have questions and they all have IDs and, you know, you have that pivot, whatever. I want you to be able to, like, archive a question and create mm-hmm. a new one. You can't modify an old question. And mm-hmm. I want some system that handles this in a, like, insured way. The same way that we're talking about this second developer coming on. I want a way that it expresses it in the code and it enforces these rules of you can't modify a row. You can only archive old ones and create new ones.
Right. So you've got kind of pros and cons to doing it in code, right? So if you do it in code, A, it's like now it's something that you can change in code.
Right.
Right?
Yep. That's the problem. Yep.
Well, no, I don't think that's a problem, right? I think that's like if the requirements for the app change, you should be able to change it in code, right? Like,
but you still, so in the in code scenario, you would have mm-hmm. your legal questions fixture of all questions in array or something, mm-hmm. right? Any developer could go in there and just change one of the questions, you know, just mm-hmm. change the sentence that is the question. The ID mm-hmm. is the same, so it's still related to the user, and it looks, you could look back and say the user. So what I'm sort of doing in the meantime is when a user answers a legal question, I store exactly what they answered to, like the plain text of the question at that point in time.
Sure.
I would love to not do that.
Sure.
Okay, so go on with your proposition?
Proposal? Yeah. Right, so the real thing is what if someone edits this data, right? Okay. So there's like a technical solution to make it impossible.
Yep.
And then there is like a code solution to like communicate that this shouldn't be done.
Okay.
Right?
What does the code solution look like? Yep.
Well, the code solution, I don't know exactly, right? But it would be something along, like you were saying, right? Like an immutability trait or something, right? Where,
oh, like on the Eloquent model, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You just throw it on the model, you know, it says like use immutable or use like insert only.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, basically that would, you know, throw exceptions from the update method and throw exceptions from the delete method, you know?
Yep.
And just like, you know, nice exceptions with nice messages that tell you that you can't be doing what you're about to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then probably would add some listeners to like, you know, I don't know what the lifecycle method for like I'm about to delete or update something is. But, you know, listen for those events and kill it before it happens.
Yeah. It's called updating and deleting, I think.
I think, is there a will update or is there just
No, they're updating, yeah. It's before update.
And updating is before update. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I
actually just code dove that today that you can actually like, yeah, if you just return false from the callback and updating, it'll just shut down the rest of the.
Yeah. Events. So just hook those methods and, you know, stop everything from updating.
Right.
The problem is, for legal purposes, you're not actually making it impossible for someone to do that.
Right.
Right. You're only. Because all they have to do is like open a new like MySQL connection in plain PHP and they can start deleting things.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the question is, are you trying to create a technical limitation that says it's impossible for people to delete rows from this database?
Yeah. Or a soft limitation.
Or a soft limitation that's just like, this app isn't designed for these rows to be deletable and it's going to break our logic if you do.
Right. So I dig the soft limitation solution that you have. I love it, and I'm probably just gonna do it. Just a quick trait that listens for updating and deleting, and then just throws an exception, and maybe automatically adds like adds an archive method with an archived at column.
Cool.
And then a scope for non-archive. Yep. So that would be sweet, and I'm probably gonna do that. How would you accomplish this? How would you accomplish the hard limitation? You might just not be able to use SQL for this.
No, you could do it with SQL, but it would, it's more of a DevOps challenge than it is a programming challenge, right? So what I would say is that the way you would do it is that you would, have multiple users, multiple MySQL users. And you know when you're setting up a new MySQL database, the little snippet that we all learned for like how to set permissions for MySQL users is like grant star on database name to username, right? What you would do instead is you would have like an insert user, and then you would have like another user that was like the big boss user, right? And insert user, you would just say grant insert on database name to this user. And then you would set up a new database connection that only had that one user, right? That or that connected to the database through that user. And then you would set that database connection for that table, right? And then the other database connection, which accesses the rest of the app, would not have access to that table, right?
Yeah.
So there's no user who can both access that table and, you know, delete stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So basically you would just have a separate user, or I don't know if you can actually have one user who has separate like insert and update rules for different tables.
Yeah.
I know you can do it for databases, but if you can, and this feels like the kind of thing that like SQL Server or Postgres would have for sure. I don't know if you can do it in MySQL, but basically what you want is like user permission level restrictions of inserts and updates and stuff. But
yeah,
that's a DevOps thing and it doesn't ship with your app.
Right.
Right. So you have to make sure that's just the case in prod.
So with the immutable trait soft limitation approach, if you have a immutable trait soft limitation approach, let's say you do it in the fixtures paradigm like we talked about. So let's say there's a fixtures database connection and then a table you create called legal questions. And okay, so you have that thing, and because we're no longer like this trait wouldn't protect anybody from rewriting, from changing the migration and remigrating, you know? So like I would still want this to be considered a fixture. How could we achieve the soft limitation while using the fixture paradigm we just talked about? You know, like you couldn't really, like Eloquent wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
Wait, can you explain the problem one more time?
Okay. So do you want me to explain like the setup and then the problem?
No, you just why this wouldn't work with the fixtures.
Yeah. So let's say you have your listening for updating, right? All that stuff. If you changed a migration, a fixtures migration, to change one of the legal questions and remigrated, it wouldn't be an update. It would be a create, you know, or somebody could just DB insert and then there would be no walls, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Like you wouldn't, I can't imagine how you.
Yeah. Could. At that point you're down to policy, right? Which is like, don't edit these migrations. Only create new migrations.
Yeah, unless like it's because it's soft, you have to just go in with the expectation that somebody could override it if they wanted. What if we had some sort of wrapper that like
wrapper for migrations?
For an immutable migration that like had some sort of checksum or something. I don't know. Something that it knew its snapshot.
I got it.
Ooh, give it to me.
Basically, it's a really, really dumb version of a blockchain. Okay? So you create an array with all of your things in it, right?
Yeah.
And one of the columns on that array is a hash of the item before it.
Ooh, keep going.
Right?
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
The item after that will have a hash of the item before it, which contains
of the all
hash
the items
of the item before it.
Right.
No, it doesn't even need to hash all the items before it, because the previous item also contains a hash. You've basically made a blockchain. Right? And it's not like a super secure blockchain. It's just like MD5 or, you know, Bcrypt or whatever. Probably something faster would be nicer. Right? So basically, by doing that, you know, there is always like the nuclear option where you like regenerate all the hashes, but we could make that an artisan command that just has tons and tons and tons of warnings, right?
Yeah. Dude, how would you lock down the one at the head of the chain? Because there's nothing coming after it?
Well, no, you couldn't. Here's the thing, right? You can't change the one at the head of the chain because the one after it, the only time you could change it is if there was only one.
Well, let's say you have five, right?
Right. So you have five. The first one have a hash.
The first one doesn't have a hash, but the one after it does.
But
so
the one
good.
After it has a hash of the first one.
Right.
So
I'm talking about the last one. The one that has a hash of the one before it, but nothing is after it to have a hash of itself. You know.
Gotcha. Okay, so maybe it has to have a hash of itself and of the last and the one before it.
Huh.
So you take the hash.
Right.
You take the hash of itself and the hash of the one before it, and then you hash those two together.
What if you just did a hash of itself and a hash of the whole thing?
Or
what
maybe
if it was
it's
just
a
hash
of
the
whole
thing? Boom!
So each
did we just become best friends? Did you hear
each,
that? Like I heard.
Yeah. Okay. That was cool. So each entry just has a hash of the entire array, like cast to JSON or something.
Yeah. So then you would just take to do your hash. The hash check could be a little expensive because the hash check would.
But
be...
it's not happening in real time, right? It's only happening in dev.
Yeah. Right. For sure. Yeah.
So it's just an artisan command that you run like every time you update this thing.
Right. Yeah. And,
and because it's not happening in prod and we don't care that much about security, right? Because these are just fixtures.
Mm-hmm.
We can just use MD5 or something fast. Like
right.
It doesn't have to be.
For sure.
The only issue is if it gets really, really, really big.
Yeah. And even if it gets, that's the beauty of fixtures is they're not like. There's, I mean, you can have a lot of fixtures, but it's not, the nature of them is fixed, you know?
You're.
So that is super duper interesting. Okay.
Blockchains are interesting because they're like a weird idea that once you know about them, you're like, oh, it's just a bunch of hashes.
Yeah.
Cool.
I dig. So how do we implement this thing? Here's what I want. I want a nice little trait on a model. I want it to say connection fixtures. Here's what I want. I want a model called legal question, and I want to say connection fixtures and then use immutable or whatever.
Wait, Caleb, why can't we do this in a database as well?
Speak
like
to me.
Maybe all of that stuff I was saying about like MySQL editing and blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
Maybe all of that's not important. What if we just did this in prod? You know?
You're going to have to break it down.
Like on an actual insert database, right? Like say you have an event source database that needs to be completely immutable, right?
Yeah.
And like we need to have some sort of confidence that nothing has changed, right? Maybe it's like financial inserts or something.
Uh-huh.
Right? What's to stop us from just hashing the previous column, the previous row?
On it, like who's doing the hashing of the previous row?
On insert.
Who's
on like
is
creating.
MySQL doing that?
No. Eloquent's doing it.
Eloquent's doing it.
We're just hooking that creating method.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
It's part of the trait. It's part of the immutable trait.
Right.
So it takes it from being a super soft limitation to being like a slightly harder limitation where. Or maybe it just hashes itself, right? Maybe each entry just hashes itself,
right.
And like that wouldn't stop you from deleting entries, but it would stop you from editing entries.
Interesting, that's pretty cool,
right? And then if you wanted to stop them from deleting entries,
in another
well, no, you know what? It would stop you from deleting entries. Here's why: every entry has a auto incrementing ID, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the hash of itself is also a hash of the IDs, right? So while someone could delete a row,
mm-hmm.
That would leave a gap in the IDs, right? You would jump from 199 to 201, right?
Right.
And
right.
You could never, you wouldn't be able to update 201 to have the ID of 200.
Right, but
You would, because you could just rehash it.
Right. So in another world, in a world mm-hmm. where I have an app where I forget the whole fixtures database connection thing, and you have an admin panel that in production admin can change these settings or they can add, let's say there's an admin panel where in production an administrator can add a legal question. We add this little use immutable thing. Each one has a row that's a hash of all the properties of itself, and we're off and running. So they can't physically edit it. Nobody can artisan tinker in and actually edit that row, because there would be something built in that would check, the thing. So anyway, that would work. But what I want, it's the migration thing. That's the thing, is in migrations, you're not using legal question :: create, you're using DB insert, or you could do legal question :: create. You could just put that in the migration and cross your fingers that nobody just erases it and DB inserts it. That's the way. That's the solution. It's really simple. The same use immutable thing. And then in the migration, here's another beauty of the fixtures approach. In the non-fixtures approach, normal migration, I never use models inside. I never use application code inside of a migration, because your application could drift and your migrations aren't under test. So if you get a new developer onboarded, the whole migration thing could fail, or you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just one of those.
Your applications are under test if you use the refresh database trait. In that some tests will fail if your migrations don't work.
Right, if you do use refresh database. Yeah, okay. It's always been my like personal guide to just only use DB insert and update inside of migrations. Not
interesting.
Not model names. I read it from a ThoughtBot blog post, and I was like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And I don't know if I care that much, but yeah, I get it.
So anyway, but with the fixtures thing, you don't have to worry about it because you're doing that refresh thing. Yeah, but you're right that you're doing a full, you're remigrating every time you run your tests now. So,
well, you're not. So refresh database doesn't always run a migration. It sometimes runs a transaction. I don't remember exactly what
the
conditionals are.
But like every time you do a full run,
yeah,
it's being torn down and re-upped.
Uh-huh.
So you're good.
You are good.
You're good. Okay. So yeah. So use models in the fixture migration, have the use immutable trait, and then figure out how you're going to, hijack the updating and deleted to throw an exception, but then also do the
blockchain, the fake blockchain.
But the fake blockchain doesn't work. It doesn't work because
it doesn't work with the real database.
Because you can just drop the whole thing and remigrate it.
It doesn't work. It's not like complete. No. But it works to stop people from changing the fixture. Right? Like, they would have to recalculate the entire thing, which would show up in your code review.
Right, but that's the same problem as before. This would still show up. If they forget about all of this stuff we're talking about, if they just mm-hmm. change a migration, it'll show up in code review.
That's true.
So we could store the hash check somewhere else. We could store it in a file that gets version controlled. I don't know either. I don't think there's a simple solution here, but I think there's some cool ideas for sure.
There are some very cool ideas. I like the immutable. I think the immutable trait should be core.
Yeah.
Like, I think this would be a very nice feature add.
Yeah, right. Forget about my fixtures remigrating all the time problem. Just to have an immutable trait on any model would be useful.
Yeah. The only thing is, like, I bet you anything that, like, it's going to be hell getting that to work on all of the supported drivers.
Oh, if you actually added the check thing, yeah. I mean, couldn't you? I think it would be useful to just have the immutable trait that doesn't allow updating.
Just the soft immutability.
Just the soft immutability, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's true. I like it.
Yeah. Sweet beans, man.
Sweet beans. Good podcast.
Yeah. You got anything?
Good good podcast. I mean, I'm kind of like, I've been doing a lot of interesting things with, yeah, here, let me give you like a quick teaser of an idea, and then maybe we can make this a full topic some other day.
Okay.
So chaining things, whether that is in like fluent chains, or middleware chains.
Yeah.
Or, you know, route parameter application stacks. There's a lot of chaining things in Laravel.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in it. So my two biggest recent features have both been middleware that intercepts you if your user hasn't met some qualifications. So one is like we were migrating user accounts to a new situation, right? We were like, and so we needed to like intercept you if your user account hadn't been migrated and like force you to go through the process.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then another thing is like we built like this whole new like terms and conditions acquiescence feature, right? Where it's like some users need to sign some documents, some users need to sign other documents, and we need to like be able to update versions of those documents and know whether you signed the latest version and blah, blah, blah. And it's middleware that just like intercepts you in that process and kind of sends you on. And there's this really cool thing in Laravel, Laravel default auth, called redirect intended, which basically just sets this session variable called url.intended or uri.intended. I forget which one.
Yep.
And so what you can do is you can just sort of pass that variable along, right? As long as that stays in the session, then at any point, like, you can basically have all of these middleware, because, right, it could be a situation where we need to intercept you multiple times before we let you go to the place where you want to go. And so we can basically say any intercepting middleware redirects you to, you know, url.intended. So we're just going to say, like, you know, we'll set url.intended and we'll redirect to it at the end of our operation.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really cool because it basically all of the middleware are able to sort of chain on top of each other and like never really lose the thread on like where you were supposed to end up.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's a pretty cool thing. That, and then I also, there is a, in the resource registrar, for the router, there is a, I need to look up what it's called. Give me just a second. There is a class called, let's see, resource registrar. Resource pending resource registration.php. Illuminate routing pending resource registration. This is a super interesting class. So what this class does is so say you need to register like a route resource, right? What this thing does is it basically gets, you know, all of the things that you chain on to that route resource, whether that's like middleware or prefixes or any of the other things that you can add to groups, you know, a name, anything.
Yeah.
It basically like, it's a, so when you say route resource, it creates a pending resource registration, and then it has a bunch of methods on it that all return itself, right? So you just get a fluent chain.
Yeah.
But at some point, you need to actually register this resource.
Yeah.
And so it uses the destructor, which is so cool. It uses the destructor, and in the destructor, it just says, this register.
How does it, when does it get destructed? Like at the end of the request itself?
Uh-huh.
That is so baller.
Right?
Oh.
And so I made a pull request because I wanted to be, so you can't actually call a destructor.
That's so good.
Right? I really want to do a whole thing on fluency. I think I'm going to do, because there's like at least.
That solves the big problem of fluency for me, which is like, yeah,
right.
How do you
execute this? Like the coolest thing I've seen in the whole Laravel code base.
How does
because it's basically a bus, right? Like every fluent method like gets on the bus, you know?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
When the destructor gets called, it's
so
like, all right,
when does
ship
the destructor
it.
Get called? If I'm thinking like
it's when this thing moves out of memory.
And when does that happen? Because that's kind of like it needs to be a timely thing if you want to be able to use that route.
Right.
You know?
It's the semicolon.
It's what?
Right. It's the semicolon at the end of the thing.
No way.
Yeah, because it's just getting called. It's just getting executed, right?
I thought, wow, okay. Yeah, yeah. Can you verify that in your head, or do we need to like
I did. This has been a couple weeks. This is when I was in Florida that I did all this research.
Wow.
So it's been probably 2 months or something. But yeah, I researched it.
That's
it's
so
very,
beautiful.
Very cool. And so anyway, what I needed to do is I needed to be able to register a method manually rather than waiting for the destructor to get called.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's like when the function execution stops,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the function that it's in. I think that's how it works. Anyway,
okay.
I needed to register early, basically.
Yeah.
This is what it is. So the destruct, you can't get a return value from the destructor. This is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to be able to get the resource that was the route group that was being created.
Yeah.
And you can't get a return value from the destructor. Right. So if I set the thing to a variable, all I would get is the pending resource registration. I would never be able to get the thing that was returned by the destructor because destructors can't return anything. So I needed to be able to register early before the destructor got called that I could actually get a return value to do things with. So what I did is so his code previously was in the destructor. It says this registrar register, and then it passes in some params.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I just made a method called this register that does that. I added kind of a flag for registered true or false.
Yeah.
And basically it just does that and it actually returns something. And then I just call that method from the destructor.
Right, right.
But what that means is that at any point in my app, I can manually call register and get a return value.
Gotcha.
But anyway, this whole destructor pattern blew my mind.
Yeah, that is so sick.
Isn't it sick? I'm obsessed now with fluency patterns in Laravel. Because if you source dive this framework, there's like a million places where, you know, things kind of build up and then happen, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, the middleware thing is an example. Like, middleware stacks are an example. The router itself is an example. Like, nested route groups, you know? He has the whole attribute stack in the router.
Yep.
This is an example. There's just so many cool examples in Laravel of...
For sure. Query building.
Fluency.
Yeah.
Query building is a great example. You know, collection chaining.
There's so many. You're totally right. That's like a huge, that's a predominant pattern.
And just, but like using them feels great. And this is the thing I think that's magic about it. This is one of the things I love most about Laravel. Using them all feels identical. Right? The user land implementation of these features is all basically like, yeah, just chain a bunch of methods.
Yeah.
And like, it happens fine. But the actual methods for implementing them are different.
Yeah.
Right? Like one uses a destructor method, like one actually like, you know, generates a new thing and then returns it, mm-hmm. like collections or something, you know? It's very interesting.
That's super interesting.
Also, why can't we have a destructor method on query builders that just calls get?
Right, because you would need it, because it wouldn't destruct until the end of the function call, right? So you wouldn't be able to use the results, because you're
uh-huh.
often
yep,
like
that's
getting
why,
results.
That's why. Yeah. Yep, you're right. All right, well, that was a fun, like, really opinionated question I asked that had a very reasonable answer.
Okay.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, that's good. Oh, good stuff. I've had a little bit of fun source diving today. There's some obscure helper methods. Have you seen? I see these every time I. Okay, tangent. Pause. Here is how to level up Laravel. Everyone listening who already knows the basics of Laravel and wants to be a genius, a peer genius, and win $1 million with hot tips. You source dive. You just go through all the methods in the collection class, in support helpers, in foundation helpers, in model.php, and what are the other? There's a couple more that every time I end up source diving these, I find a new thing. It's such an easy way. Just read through the the available validation methods. All the things that are giant lists of stuff that people can't keep in their heads. If you just dive them, whenever
you'll
you're
become
bored,
a genius.
You will become a genius. Just go through and scroll down.
Query builder
scrolling.
Is amazing. Model is amazing. Route and route group. All of the router stuff is insanely cool.
The router stuff's hard to dive though. So
it's hard to
if
dive.
You're looking
for
just
sure
just a good pastime, all you gotta do is collection.php, command R, and just hit down, 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 and we'll look at every method name and go, oh, that's there. Oh, what does that do? And then read the thing and then look at the source. That was supposed to be a tweet at some point, but it just came out right here. So there you go.
Now it's a podcast. I hope you stuck around. 56 minutes.
The two helper methods, really quick. There's cool ones in support helpers is my favorite. Foundation helpers is stuff that has to do with Laravel. Support helpers is stuff that you could conceivably use in any PHP project.
Sure.
And support helpers is mostly string and array helpers, but there's all the little sprinkled goodies. Like there's blank and filled and value. You seen those? And I use value and filled pretty often. So blank does a thorough empty check, but you know how there's all those built-in PHP gotchas with checking falsy?
Yes.
Blank does an accurate falsy check.
Cool.
So you don't get weirdness. Filled is just not blank. So I use filled. If I'm ever doing a truthy check or falsy check, I use filled and blank. And then there's value, which is cool. Value takes whatever you put into it. It either gives you a value that you pass into it, or it executes the callback if you pass a callback into it. So it's just whatever you're passing into me, just spit out the value of that thing, whether it's already a value or if it's yet to be a value and it's a callback. So value's nice, and I've seen that around more than I've actually used it. I haven't had occasion to use it. So those three are ones that I use and I like. There's tap. Tap is fun.
Tap rocks.
Tap's one of those fun ones that's used a ton in the data or in the code base. It's we've seen the tweets, we've seen the posts, we know what it does. But then there's two other weird ones that you probably never heard of. With and transform. Have you seen these?
No. What is with?
So with, this is weird. With has two parameters. First one is a value, second one is a callback. If the callback is not null, then it will put the value through the callback. If the callback is null, it'll just spit out the value. So
wait, one more time.
I know. They're weird. It's hard to keep in your head what they do.
Say it again. I think I'm almost there.
Yeah. Okay. So with, first parameter is a value.
Uh-huh.
Just like tap. Uh-huh. Second parameter is a callback.
Uh-huh.
If the callback is not null, if it's a thing, then it'll put the value through the callback and return the result. If the callback is null, then it will just return the value. So the only use case that I can think of off the top of my head is when you have a method, and this is super specific. If you have a method that has an optional second parameter callback, you know how there's often like an optional callback in Laravel?
Mm-hmm.
Then you could just do with, pass that callback through and not have to check if the callback was passed or not, you know. Does that make sense?
No.
does what with does make sense? Like, do you get
it? Does it does make sense? I just don't not understand a, why I would use it.
I know that's I have the same question, and that's why you don't see it fire tip tweeting all over the place, because it's like really specific.
Okay, but what's the other one?
The other one is Transform. Transform has more use cases, I believe. Just so I believe with is used once in the entire Laravel code base, just so you know.
Cool.
And Transform is also
it's a useful
used.
Abstraction then.
Transform is also used once in the entire Laravel code base.
Cool.
And it is used in a in a method called transform. So
you don't say.
Yep. But I think there's potential here. Here's what it
does.
First parameter is a value, just like tap, just like with. Okay. Second parameter is a callback. Okay. If and it's not a nullable callback, it's just a callback. And then there's an optional third parameter that's a default, just like the first method, like a collection first method. So it's actually pretty similar. It behaves similarly to the first method. The value goes through the callback no matter what. It goes through the first callback. If it returns positively, then it returns the return value of the callback. If the return value of the callback is falsy, then it spits out the default value, which can either be a value or a callback.
And is one of the options to pass the initial value through the second callback as the return for falsy?
Huh. You're saying, does the default callback accept the falsy value?
Okay. Like, let's say, for example, I have a full name string, right?
Okay.
And I don't know whether it has like suffixes on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to split it into first name and last name.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would pass it through like the first call. This is like a really bad example because there's way better ways to do this. But I would pass it through the first callback. And it would basically be like, you know, if, you know, there's only one space in the name, you know, then return this array first name, last name. You know, otherwise return false, you know, so then if that comes back false, could I then pass it through a different callback that
is interesting. Does the default callback take the original thing? That's the question, right?
Yeah, exactly. Does it take the original param?
I'm just going to look it up and tell you.
It should.
So the default takes the original value. Yes.
Yeah. So then you could, yeah, that's cool. So then you could have like all of your complex
nonsense.
It's an
if else. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
so a wait, callback it, that's, if wait. Else.
No, it is. It is. It's just if.
What?
Transform is just if.
Right. But it's if else, right?
Yeah. It's if else.
Yeah. It's just if else. Right. That's why I think it could be super valuable. So I literally command shift F'd my whole project for every if statement and started walking through it. And trying to see if I can get rid of an if and use this transform. Nothing jumped out at me. But keep it in your head. I think this is one that is named weirdly.
Yep.
But there's a hot tip tweet here. I'm letting you into my world. This is in the back of my head now. Like, transform. Caleb, every time you write an if statement, see if you can use transform. And then one day I'll go, hey, every time you do this, use transform. And then bam, fire. This
could be the hottest tweet. The hottest tweet.
Oh
man, I really hope people stuck around for the end of the podcast, because this has been a great last 15 minutes.
I agree.
Yeah. I hope you didn't get turned
Seriously.
Off by all our talk of you know,
this whole podcast was just good.
It was solid.
Really,
it was so
just
solid.
Saturated.
It was just
with
like
original,
it was like
thought.
Topic followed by topic followed by topic followed by like just all the things that we haven't tweeted in the last 3 months.
I know. Yeah. Oh, very good stuff. I really appreciate this.
Ooh,
time, Decol.
That is some good podcast, Caleb.
Oh, all right. We're back. 20% time. Here we go.
20% time. We're back. Back in action. Like, comment, and subscribe. Don't forget to smash that like button.
Star that parental GitHub repository.
Star that parental GitHub repository.
Like subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Click the little bell because it really helps you get notified when we upload our next video. Make sure that you are following everyone on Twitter. Follow Taylor Otwell on Twitter, follow Jeffrey Way on Twitter, follow Adam Wath on Twitter, Matt Stauffer on Twitter, follow Samantha Geis, follow Keith Damiani, follow all of Titan on Twitter.
This is like the end of SNL. I love it.
Oh, and the beginning of every gaming related YouTube video. What's up, guys? It's your boy Daniel. Welcome back to 20% Time. Today we're going to be doing a quick run through of a lot of the unknown or little known helper methods inside of the Laravel framework.
Dude,
now, you guys may have seen some of these helpers in other videos, but I thought I would compile a master video that contains every helper function that I think is underutilized in Laravel.
Oh, dude, that was beautiful. Hannah watches all these like Disney videos, like top 10 things in the park or like things that, you know, have changed, whatever. They're like just like the like info type fan video things. And they
things
literally
start
talk
with,
like overly.
What's up, guys?
Like,
welcome back.
Literally. You're killing it. You're nailing it. That's exactly it.
If you do like this video, feel free to give it a like. If you don't like it, don't do anything. And yeah. Oh, by the way, give us 10 stars, 12 stars. 12 stars on iTunes.
12 stars on iTunes.
Good podcasting. All right, good content. I have to help a friend figure out how JavaScript works.
Oh, great.
Real quick.
All right. I had to set up Ballet on Windows, Laravel and Ballet and Composer on Windows, and I should tell
you
how much that sucks sometimes.
You made it?
Yeah, I made
Survived?
It. No, I didn't, actually. I ended up using XAMPP.
Bummer, dude. Bummer.
Bummer. All right, I'm going to stop this recording here.
Same.
All right.